the All Things XR podcast. Where you can get the best AR/VR analyzers from the biggest names in the field. Hi everyone, welcome to the All Things XR podcast. I'm Mojtaba. In today's episode, we talk about ARCloud and Spatial Web with Jameson Deitweiler, co-founder and CEO of Phantasmo. Hi, Jameson.
Hey there, how's it going?
Thanks, great. So, Jameson, can you tell us more about yourself and your company, Phantasmo?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm an entrepreneur, been building venture-backed startups since I left college, been moved from Philadelphia to Silicon Valley back in 2011. Spent a couple of years there building a company called LaunchRock. Exited that company to a company called Startups.com. And then reconnected with my best friend from college, Ryan Measel, who is finishing up a PhD there at Drexel University, where he went studying electrical and computer engineering. And we started talking about an old idea that we had had really back probably around 2010, in the early days of the iPhone. And so this is in 2014, started talking again about building a world-scale augmented reality game that would be sort of like Pokemon in real life, this is back in 2014. So we started up our company as Phantasmo Studios and started creating a game called Blaminals. So it was our own original creative intellectual property to build a world-scale sort of deep AR game. So where it was spatially aware, multi-user, persistent, et cetera. And over time, sort of Phantasmo Studios transformed into a tools and infrastructure company, helping people build what, you know, some people talk about as AR cloud, but we think of it as the spatial web. But ultimately, you know, Phantasmo, our goal is to digitize the world so that you can write software that operates in the world, that's manifested through a phone or glasses as augmented reality, or through a robot or autonomous vehicle or other applications like that.
So, Jameson, what are the use cases for spatial maps and AR cloud beside AR, and which do you think has more potential in short and long term?
So certainly you can look at robotics and autonomous vehicles. There's definitely specific needs for each of those verticals, but really what you need to do is create like this 3D map of the world that the base level of which is known as a point cloud. So you basically, machines essentially see the world not in sort of solid form as we do, but through measurements that are sort of a bunch of points collected in space. And so robotics is absolutely a very big application on that front. Ultimately, we are trying to answer for robotics, augmented reality, any of these types of applications. There's sort of two questions that, you know, we as humans ask as we walk around the world, that sort of machines need to be able to ask too, which is, where am I, with a higher level of accuracy than GPS provides, and what's me? So that's understanding where surfaces are, where door handles are, where products are, and building a sort of spatial database and solution that makes it easy for them to create makes it easy for machines to create a memory of the environment. So I think AR, robotics are all very exciting applications, but ultimately this is going to come down to IoT as well and sort of building automation systems. When you look at sort of spatial applications, this is what's going to allow us to have sort of automated access control. So what I mean by that, you can, you know, walk to your apartment building. It will know that it's you. It will open up the door, and then it will take you to the elevator. The elevator will take you to your apartment and let you in, all without having to use a key. And it'll be able to do the same thing in a safe way for the, you know, a UPS or FedEx delivery person, but only when you know that they're supposed to be delivering a product to you. And so it would only give them that sort of permission in that way. And so there's a lot of things that need to be built to enable that, but at the core, sort of at the foundation, the building blocks here is to create this 3D model of the world that's easily accessible in a safe and secure way. You can kind of think about it as like a canvas to sort of build on top of.
Great. Recently, you tweeted a very interesting tweet storm about AR Cloud and Spatial Web and Location DNS, which we will put its link in the podcast description, about why the concept of AR Cloud is busted and the shift in technology toward Spatial Web. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that the first of all, sort of this infrastructure that's being built is has significantly broader applications than just augmented reality. Mm-hmm. As discussed, you know, looking at autonomous robotics, access control, all these types of things. So these are all applications that we think about as spatial applications, and they need to, you know, in order to really build them, you need to build on top of the real world. And so first you need to digitize the real world in order to enable that to be possible. So there's a whole category of applications that's beyond augmented reality. The other reason that we sort of like web over cloud is that we believe that the best model and the only realistic model to get to scale is one that looks a lot more like the way the internet was built, as opposed to, you know, the app store model or, you know, a private API model with Facebook and those things. Uh-huh. You really need to build this in a way that is on the back of, you know, common shared standards, open source software, and sort of the ability for people and companies to choose where their data is stored. There's a number of reasons that this is important. One of the biggest being privacy and security. You don't really want Apple or Google likely to store sort of all of the information about your apartment. And certainly companies that operate retail environments, or say Disney with Disney World and Disneyland and their other parks, they don't just want to give up a full 3D reproduction of that to some company that ultimately is probably in the future going to show ads on top of that, that they have no control over or revenue share in. And two, the thing not to forget is that if you look at like Amazon Go and what Amazon's doing in Seattle by you're able to walk into a store and just walk out and everything is resolved automatically, your Amazon account is charged, et cetera. That type of functionality will extend to all environments at some point in the future. And it will be built on this sort of spatial application framework or the spatial web. So you've got to be able to control this data and do it in a way where you can work with Apple, Google, Facebook, Snapchat, and whomever else, but in a way that where you're able to control that and ultimately be able to monetize that too if you have, you know, if you have a large audience in the case of a retail environment or a venue for concerts or sports, etc.
I see. Back to Phantasmo, can you tell us more about it and how does your technology works and how is it different from similar companies, and also absolutely about your interesting technology called CPS camera positioning system?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we are really doing, sort of we try to think about making it easy for developers to do is to import reality into their tools. We're currently focused on content production tools and specifically Unity. Uh-huh. So we make it really easy for somebody to use, to either pull an existing 3D model of an environment, and we're building up databases of public spaces and ultimately of private spaces too, where you'll be able to request access to those. Or if a space has not been mapped or is not recent enough, you're able to go and map that yourself. You can do this in your apartment, an outdoor space, whatever it may be, using an iOS application, and soon there will be an Android application as well, to basically walk around. It takes a series of images. It's pretty smart about how it selects those, sends it up to our cloud service, which is built on our Terra OS, which is an open source spatial system. And that's just one instance that we run for people. You could download this yourself and run it on your own as well. In the future, we're getting ready to open source that. But this takes these images, it turns it into a 3D model. You can view that 3D model online, and then you can download that and load it into Unity. And this basically looks like you're just importing the real world environment into there, like a level in Unity, and place content into there. And then you can publish a Unity app. And then what we do, and our camera positioning standard technology does, is it makes sure that when you load that Unity app up in the location that the content was designed for, that it will actually start taking images from the camera when you're in the AR mode, and it will take those images, it will compare it to the CPS map that was created, and then by running some fancy math equations on this, basically, it will actually tell you exactly where the phone is, down to a couple centimeters or less, with 6 degrees of freedom. And so now what this means is you can know precisely where you are. Well, specifically, you know precisely where the camera is, and then you can infer where the phone is and then where the person is from that. And this allows you to place yourself in the space really accurately. So the content that the creator had placed in the environment in Unity shows up exactly where it should be. And this allows you to create multi-user or multiplayer experiences and make sure that the content is persistent. It also allows you to create content that interacts with the physical environment in a way that wasn't previously possible before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see. So it needs to be pre-built. So it is not real time. Like, for example, can users experience their AR content and at the same time build spatial maps to have occlusions and improve their experience, or it has to be pre-built and on a database and imported on the app?
So currently we're focused on pre-mapping. That we do plan in the future to move towards sort of a real-time feedback system where you're mapping, if it's an unknown environment, it can map in real time. But it is a little bit of kind of two different problems. There's the spatial perception side, right, which is what we sort of interpret as we move around the world. And you can think about it like when we walk through a space, we kind of essentially create a mesh of it. We map it and we kind of understanding. Same thing for AR devices. And we really think that that problem is being tackled pretty well by, AR Kit and AR Core. And then we've got some friends too, like 6D, that are doing some of the work there. But it's sort of an on-device problem. It's a local SDK sort of thing. We think about what we're doing as more of the spatial memory and then allowing these devices to share the spatial memory so you have that sort of persistent context. At some point, they do meet in the middle. But that's probably, several years away at least.
Interesting. So does it also work with AR Core and AR Kit, or it is a completely different technology?
Yeah, so it leverages both AR Kit and AR Core, depending on which platform you're on. And so what we do, and you can see a video on our site that kind of shows how this works, AR Kit and AR Core are essentially, they are essentially SLAM technologies that are tracking the movement of the device as you walk through an environment or move through an environment. It could be a different mode of transit. What happens is that without sort of an existing map and no real sort of frame of reference, SLAM inherently does drift. There's some things you do to correct it and things like that, but it doesn't actually know exactly where it is in the environment. It's not actually positioning, or sort of the academic, more technical term is localized inside of that. So it can track the device, but it doesn't know exactly where it is. It has a pretty good guess of, where it moved from point A to point B, but that also tends to sort of lose accuracy over sort of distance traveled. So what our CPS technology does is it takes the images that you send up to the CPS server and says, okay, we know that at the time that this image was sent, this device was in this exact coordinate. And then you create sort of a series of these and you kind of track it over time. And so what that does is it helps you with initial positioning or localization. So when you boot up, it tells you exactly where you are in that environment. And over time, when you move, it will tell you that the SLAM algorithm, AR Kit or AR Core, has drifted in its estimate of where you are. Uh-huh. And then the client SDK that we have that runs in Unity, and we'll have a native one as well, basically takes that CPS position that's returned and then corrects the path. And we do some things like, we're going to be doing some things like smoothing to help sort of make sure it doesn't just jump the user and have the content move around. But then helps you basically create that best estimate and help you sort of stay on track. And that smoothing sort of thing is not particularly unique. It's actually a pretty solved problem at this point, because you tend to have these issues with multiplayer gaming over the internet. You tend to have packet drops and things like that that cause these issues, and so nothing unique there, but it helps ultimately build sort of a better experience for the user, so it seems really seamless to them.
Mm-hmm, I see. So Jameson, the thing with visual approaches is that maybe the environment changes over time, especially in indoor scenarios. How do you manage that?
So we are building the technology so that the maps are like self-healing or self-updating. So when you actually do, when basically you're a client that's accessing the content in the environment or a robot that's using the map, all the images that you're using to position in there are actually used to update it. So if you're in a space and a chair has moved, it will help indicate that you will notice that and bring it back to the map. If a poster on a wall or an advertisement has changed, it'll do the same thing. And we don't need to have, you know, now if the building got knocked down and you're back there, that's not going to work. But over what you can do is if you're in a mall and the merchandising in a store changes, then you're going to notice that and it'll update automatically over time. And we're building tools into Terra OS, which helps basically maintain these spatial maps that'll actually give you a give our customers or anybody that's using it a positioning quality heuristic. And so what I mean by that is that people could be using basically the map in a mall, and they could walk around and they could use it. And what'll happen is that we'll be tracking how often the localization events are occurring accurately. And if somebody goes to a specific area of the mall and we notice that, hey, like this is not actually, the position is not correct. You can't return an accurate position. And like the imagery that's coming in is so different from what we already had that we can't bring it back into the map. And what it'll do is actually indicate to the mall and say, hey, you know, this area has changed enough that you need to go out there and you need to build an intentional map. And that could be around, say, like a holiday activation, you know, where if there's a Christmas tree in the middle of the mall and they had forgot to update the map, then it had changed so much, it'll let them know. And the goal there is that it'll help sort of catch any of those things before too many people get errors.
So what is Phantasmo's model? You know, the users have to connect to Phantasmo servers to get the maps, or will you enable developers to create their own maps on top of their own apps?
Our model, so for us, we basically want to build tools and sort of democratize access to all of these technologies. And we really believe that it's important to make that widely accessible and inexpensive. Where we're sort of seeing monetization for us is working directly with enterprises mm-hmm. that need to do large-scale reality capture and convert their spaces into these 3D spatial maps. And some of these applications are for augmented reality. Many of them are actually just for other things where they're just trying to convert the data into traditional 2D maps or even sort of AutoCAD or Revit type files. And so what we're really good at, and the technology is really good at, is really efficiently capturing reality and translating that in any format that you need. Uh-huh. And, you know, augmented reality is not a huge market yet, but the need to efficiently capture space and to digitize it is huge, actually. There's like very large pre-existing industries around this, and we're able to bring in a level of efficiency and build these tools in a way that help enterprises with these needs. The cool thing is that by doing that and working with some of these customers who are, you know, creating floor plans for a bunch of buildings, when you map them, they also become augmented reality enabled. So in that process, unlocking this possibility that wasn't there before.
Great. Jameson, what do you think about the privacy in AR Cloud? It will be surely a very strategic database, and I think governments will want to have control over it, or at least they will prefer their cities and locations not to be mapped by other countries' companies. What are your thoughts on that?
In terms of privacy and how it should
be handled? Yeah. You know, I think that it is a very strategic database, having spatial maps of locations. And I think that governments in each country will be sensitive over that and will want to have it have control over it. What do you think about that? Will you see such things?
Yeah, I think that you're going to see, so there's two things. One is when you look at private property, we're already seeing a resistance from people giving that data up to the big tech companies, especially when you've got a very, you know, valuable property portfolio. Could be, you know, stadiums and venues or retail and, you know, multi-tenant retail, like malls, those types of things. They're already quite hesitant to hand that over. Or if you're a university, we've had conversations with universities here in the United States. They're very hesitant to externalize a lot of information for safety reasons. They don't want to have an entire map of the campus accessible Because, you know, we have, unfortunately, in the U.S., we've got a lot of issues with active shooters showing up. And so that's just giving them information that's not safe to have. So, I mean, ultimately, it would be helpful for them to expose that to their students. And especially, like, they have concerns in terms of helping people who are visually impaired or have issues with, you know, or impaired in other ways and need better directions to help them navigate so they can find ramps or get auditory responses. By the way, helping people who are visually impaired navigate the world is actually another very big application that we're really excited about.
Yeah.
And emergency responders. When you look at municipalities and cities, and when you look at cities, states, and countries, I do believe that you're already seeing in certain countries a move towards trying to treat this infrastructure as state-owned or at least state-controlled assets. We will certainly see that in quite a few places. I do believe also that every country, probably sometime in the next decade or so, at least for all first world countries, will take control of their geospatial data. So let's step 10 years into the future, right? Where we have scooters everywhere, like I'm here in Venice, California, in Los Angeles, and I have, there's 100 scooters within a block of me probably right now, from Bird and Lime. But you have autonomous vehicles or even just Uber and Lyft and all of these things. You've got all of these sort of spatial applications, right? These are spatial applications. This is software that's operating out there. And what you have is you've got cities that are getting congested and frankly, like very inefficiently operated. And a large part of the reason of that is because there's no protocol for the city to communicate with these spatial applications. Mm-hmm. There's also, by the way, no protocol for a city to dynamically change speed limits or move lanes or, you know, change parking requirements. When you, if you go to park on the street here, you look at a sign and that sign tells you what, you know, the hours for parking and if it's blocked during the evening or on the weekends, but the city has no way to change that without sending somebody out there to physically change the sign. This does not make sense from a logistical standpoint. And when you're looking at things that are primarily going to be operated by software in the future, when our mobility solutions from cars to scooters to subways, you're ultimately going to end up actually writing the location of those stop signs and the speed limits and the parking and the lanes from software. And then the signage and the physical organization of those streets will adapt to the software. And then you're going to be able to communicate all of these new rules back to all the mobility solutions. And this is going to allow us to build a much more sort of organically operated and create a sort of mobility infrastructure and create a much better relation between people and these vehicles that are here. And you're already seeing like this big resistance from a lot of governments for these new mobility solutions that kind of show up and place these scooters out there, whatever it may be. And I am a huge believer in scooters specifically, by the way. Yeah. It's a transformational technology for my life. I tell people that I lived in San Francisco when Uber started, and that was one of the biggest impacts on my life in terms of quality of life and specifically around mobility. When Bird put scooters into my neighborhood, it was as equally big an impact for me, and it's fundamentally transformed the way that I get around. But you've got to find a way to work with the cities, and there's got to be a way for them to communicate with each other.
Interesting. Speaking of privacy, Jameson, are there any dangers that big companies that have our photos and record our locations map our surroundings without our permission? I mean, for example, a company with a popular game like Pokemon Go can do that with your technology without users even noticing, right?
So there's certainly a concern for that in terms of how that gets leveraged. And this is why we think it's really important to have a first-party data model where that's defined not by what the device is, but where you're at, right? So if you're collecting data inside of somebody's apartment, the data from that can be used to update the map for it, but it needs to go wherever the person who owns the apartment specified, or the mall or what it means. And so it is definitely a big concern. I think that thankfully, at least in the U.S., we have even our existing legal framework does provide some protection to us. And it's going to be very hard for people to really scale a solution that's just going to try and capture that information without really telling anybody. And if you look at the big technology companies that are out there that are working on this, they really do already operate from that viewpoint. It's not a level of risk they're willing to take. You will see startups that try to take that risk, but I think they're going to fail very quickly doing that.
Do you think any of today's big players like Facebook, Google, Apple, Snapchat, Microsoft has an approach similar to your vision or wanting to take over AR cloud?
Certainly. I mean, you can see that Google has their visual positioning service. Apple's building all of the AR kit technology, and it's not too hard to imagine that you go from there and obviously investing significantly in maps. You know, you can look at Facebook, and they certainly have the engineering talent in there as part of the Oculus organization and others. We certainly think that, you know, most of the big technology companies are at the very least seriously considering trying to compete in this space if they are not already.
I see. So you mentioned Google's VPS or visual positioning system. How is it different from Phantasmo's CPS?
So their VPS system is a black box API. Nobody really knows how the technology works. I mean, we know how it works in principle, but the code's not public. It's a proprietary API using their SDK, sends up images, and it localizes the device. What we've done is build a solution that the entire stack, both from creating the maps to reading the maps, is going to be open source. And the data format, what we're going to be the .cps file, will have an open specification that we publish to create a feature descriptor map. It's really what it is of a space. And our goal is that basically CPS ends up becoming a standard that's accepted across all these platforms, so that any computer vision platform, from iOS to Android to Intel RealSense to even at the Qualcomm level, that they'll be able to read CPS maps for any environments. And so we think of basically this type of technology a lot more like wireless. Like sort of like in the 802.11 specification for wireless communication, we're doing this for camera-based position.
And VPS also needs, I think, depth data, while CPS doesn't need that, right?
So the VPS was built on Google Tango technology. Which did have a depth sensor, but if you look at the way that the VPS technology worked, it actually didn't use the depth data. And they have not opened anything yet, but they showed at Google I/O this past year VPS working on a standard AR core enabled Android phone with Google Maps. And so they're not certainly are building it, if that's any indication, in a way that does not depend on a depth camera.
I see. So is Phantasmo available for developers to try?
If you're signed up on our wait list, we've got we're actually like significantly increasing the developers that we're giving access to this week. So that's at phantasmo.io, phantasmo.io. Get on there and get on the wait list. If you want to get on there sooner, you can just tweet at phantasmo.io on Twitter, and we'll make sure to bump you up or just send an email. If you sign up on there, you can actually, if you reply to the email from the sign up, it'll literally go into my inbox. And so I try and answer every email that comes through there.
Yeah, Jameson, I've signed up. So Magic Leap recently launched its first version of its headsets for developers. Have you tried them?
I actually haven't yet. We need to pick up one here for the office, but I've been traveling a bunch lately, so to do it. All the feedback I've heard from everybody, though, is people are pleasantly surprised with the quality of the device. So I'm excited to check it out.
How do you think it will affect the augmented reality industry?
I think that it's going to be really good to see more successes on these fronts. I think that looking at head-mounted displays like Magic Leap and like Microsoft's HoloLens, that there's still a long ways for them to go, at the very least for them to be always on glasses. When you look at Magic Leap and HoloLens, these are things that are meant to be worn for, you know, a couple hours probably at most, typically in a single room or just a couple of rooms. And it's a different model than that. And so I think for those applications, for entertainment gaming or enterprise applications, it's going to be really exciting and interesting to see. I still think we're probably a couple years away from a consumer device for either of those parties or anyone else in that model. And then the always on glasses, you know, I don't really have a timeline for that. I don't expect, you know, a lot of people talk about Apple doing something in 2020. It's possible. I don't think it's likely. And so I think we're a long ways away from that. I really believe that AR is going to first take off through mobile. I think there's still a lot of experimentation that needs to be done there. It's going to be a lot. I think we're kind of in the GeoCities, or if you want to, you know, the fart app phase kind of right now. And I think we need to be, as an industry, be okay with that. We don't spend a lot of time around utility-driven applications, with the exception of like a little bit of navigation stuff. Although I don't believe in holding a phone up and navigating through AR. I think you're going to walk with the map down. And then what you'll do with AR from a navigation perspective is do things like help you find your Uber or your Bird scooter or find a product on the shelf. But you're going to walk to the location and then you'll turn it up to do that. But even if you look at the game side, you know, AR is just a feature and often kind of not a very important one in things like Pokemon Go. And they're improving and they're adding more to that over time. I think we'll see some cool new stuff from them. I'm sure in the next year around more of that. But you're not seeing a lot of breakout games in that front. They tend to be sort of micro experiences or features. I've literally bought furniture using an augmented reality feature and seeing that it fits and what it looks like. So I think in the Wayfair app. We'll see these things kind of emerge. And then I think we'll start to see more in-depth sort of engaging experiences, especially as you can build persistent applications, multi-user applications in these things. As the spatial web or, you know, somebody like to call it the inner cloud come there and become available, that's when you're going to really unlock all the potential for the excitement that people, people are trying to get to.
Yeah, totally agree. So one last question, Jameson. What do you think will be the killer app for AR, and when will be AR's iPhone moment?
the killer app for AR. So I think there's probably a couple things that could happen. Let me frame this slightly differently. If I were building an app right now and my goal, specifically a consumer application, I would be building a virtual pet app or an augmented reality pet app. That I think that would, you know, is really beautiful. Has spent a lot of time and effort on building beautiful characters and assets and responsiveness and scripts. But I'd also make sure that it is multiplayer. So if you come over to my house and we have where our pets can play together, it's persistent. And persistent not just like while you're there, that if you leave and you come back, but like where you're actually able to leave a pet at the house, go to work. Maybe you take one pet to work and you play with that there. But you could come back and that pet has actually been modifying the environment all day. If you forgot to feed it, it could mess up the place. If you forgot to take it out to the bathroom, it could poop on the floor. those types of things. I think those experiences, lend themselves well to sort of short play sessions, a lot of engagement. It's obviously things you want to take a lot of photo and video of. And I think if you do that really well, which is not an easy task, but if you can do that really well, I think that I'd put money on sort of a virtual pet game being sort of the first breakout hit for AR.
Great. Well, Jameson, thanks very much for joining the All Things XR podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you. Had a great time.